The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. So today, we're tackling something huge. Happiness, but maybe not happiness the way you usually think about it.
Exactly. We're diving into Martin Seligman's book, Authentic Happiness. It's kind of foundational.
Foundational is the right word. It didn't just, you know, study happiness. It basically launched the whole scientific field of positive psychology.
Which has really big implications for, well, for your life, because it completely shifts the focus. For so long, psychology was stuck in what they call the disease model.
Right, focusing on what's broken. Misery, anxiety, depression.
Yeah, spending almost all its energy diagnosing problems, fixing what's wrong with the mind. Basically studying suffering.
But Seligman asked, what about the other side? What if just not being miserable isn't the same as actually flourishing?
Exactly. What about studying what goes right with people? You know, the strengths, the resilience, the times we're thriving. That was the big question.
So our goal today is to give you a shortcut. We want to unpack Seligman's framework, the science behind it, and really get to the heart of what builds a genuinely fulfilling life.
It's about understanding those three pillars he identified. Moving beyond just chasing pleasure. And to really get why this was such a big deal, you have to understand Seligman himself. Dr. Martin Seligman, American psychologist, UPenn professor.
And widely seen as the father of positive psychology. He even used his time as APA president back in 98 to really kickstart the whole movement.
Right. But here's what makes his perspective so compelling, I think. He didn't start out focusing on happiness, not at all.
No, his early work, the research that really made his name, was on something called learned helplessness.
Which is pretty much the opposite of flourishing, isn't it? It's that state where you learn you have no control over bad things happening.
Leading to feeling powerless, hopeless, basically the psychological roots of depression. He spent decades on that.
Decades studying what goes wrong. And then he turned that same scientific rigor, that same empirical approach, to figuring out what goes right.
That's the key pivot. It gives the whole positive psychology thing so much weight. It's not just philosophy or wishful thinking.
Absolutely. It's science applied to hope, resilience, and strength. Authentic happiness is built on that empirical foundation.
Okay, so let's dig into the core argument. Seligman's big idea is that real authentic happiness isn't about just, you know, feeling good all the time. It's not passive.
Right. It's not about maximizing pleasure, chasing the next high.
Huh.
He argues it's an active state.
Active how?
By identifying your unique core character strengths, the things you're naturally good at and energized by, and then actively using them.
And crucially, using them for something bigger than just yourself, right?
Exactly. That's where meaning comes in. So feeling good is nice. It's part of it, but it's not the main event. He lays out this framework, the three pillars of happiness.
Okay, pillar number one.
That's the pleasant life. This is what most people think of as happiness. Maximizing positive emotions, enjoying simple pleasures.
Like a good meal, sunshine, laughing with friends, that kind of stuff.
Precisely. Important, definitely part of a good life. But Seligman warns, it's kind of shallow. And we adapt to it really fast. The buzz wears off.
Ah, the hedonic treadmill we hear about. Okay, so what's pillar two?
That's the good life, or sometimes he calls it the engaged life. This is deeper. It's about experiencing flow.
Flow.
Yeah.
That feeling of being totally absorbed in something, losing track of time.
That's the one. It happens when you're using your skills, your strengths to meet a challenge. It's deeply engaging, effortless almost. Even if it's hard work.
Okay, that feels more substantial than just pleasure. And the third pillar.
The meaningful life. This is the top tier. It involves taking those signature strengths you use in the good life.
The things that lead to flow.
And applying them in the service of something larger than yourself. Purpose, contribution, connection to something beyond your own needs.
So, there's a hierarchy. Pleasure is okay, engagement is better, but meaning is the deepest source of fulfillment.
That's the core idea. Sustainable happiness comes mostly from the good life and the meaningful life.
Okay, that structure makes sense. And he backs this up with a kind of formula, doesn't he? The H equal S plus C plus V thing.
Yes, the happiness formula. It's a simple way to break down the different factors. H, obviously, is your level of enduring happiness.
And S.
S is your set range. This is basically your genetic lottery ticket for happiness. It accounts for, get this, about 50% of the variation between people.
50%? Wow. So half of it is just baked in, like a thermostat.
Pretty much. You've got a kind of baseline range you tend to return to, thanks to your genes. It's not a fixed point, but a range.
Okay, half is genetics. What's C?
C is circumstances. This is all the external stuff we chase. Money, marriage, health, where you live, your job title.
The things society tells us will make us happy if we just get enough of them.
Exactly. But here's the kicker, scientifically speaking. Circumstances. They only account for about 10 to 15% of your happiness level.
Wait, hold on. Only 10, 15%? Are you serious? We spend so much energy trying to change our circumstances.
I know, right? It's shocking when you first hear it. But the research backs it up. Why so low? Because of that hedonic treadmill you mentioned.
We just adapt, get the raise, feel good for a bit, then it's the new normal.
Precisely. Win the lottery, you get a boost. But studies show you eventually drift back towards your set range. Same with negative events, surprisingly. We're adaptation machines.
Okay, that's kind of depressing, but also really empowering. Because if S is fixed and C doesn't matter that much.
But the real action is in V, voluntary control. This is the stuff you can influence directly. Your choices, your actions, your thoughts, how you interpret things.
And that accounts for the rest, roughly 40%.
Around that, yes. And that's where Seligman focuses. How do you actively work on your V factor to live the top end of your genetic set range?
So how do we cultivate V? Where do we start?
Well, Seligman breaks it down. He suggests ways to boost V even within that first pillar, the pleasant life, by managing our relationship with the past, present, and future.
Okay, like what? For the past?
Two main tools, gratitude and forgiveness. Gratitude isn't just feeling thankful. It's actively savoring good memories, amplifying them. He suggests things like the gratitude letter exercise writing and delivering a letter to someone you're thankful for.
That sounds powerful. And forgiveness.
It's about letting go of the bitterness and anger tied to bad memories. Not condoning what happened, but loosening its grip on your present happiness.
Makes sense. What about the future?
That's all about optimism. But not just Pollyanna-ish hope. It's about your explanatory style, how you explain bad events to yourself.
Ah, right. Optimists see setbacks differently.
Exactly. They tend to see bad stuff as temporary, not permanent. Specific to this one situation, not universal and external, not entirely their fault. Pessimists do the opposite.
And there's a tool for that too, right? The ABCDE model.
Yep. A, adversity happens. B, you notice your belief about it. C, you see the emotional consequence. Then comes D, disputation, actively arguing against those pessimistic beliefs. Find evidence, alternative explanations, which leads to E, energization, feeling better and taking action. It's cognitive therapy, basically.
Okay, past, future. What about boosting V in the present moment?
Here, Seligman makes a crucial distinction between pleasures and gratifications.
Pleasures are, like eating chocolate, sensory, quick.
Yes, momentary, often sensory. They feel good, but they fade fast, and we habituate, we need more next time for the same kick.
And gratifications.
Gratifications are different. They require effort, skill, concentration. Think about getting lost in playing music, solving a tough problem, having a great conversation, gardening.
Things that lead to that flu state we talked about.
Exactly. Gratifications engage your strengths. They don't habituate easily. You don't get used to the feeling of mastering a skill in the same way you get used to the taste of ice cream. And this.
Yeah.
This is the bridge to the good life.
Right.
So that distinction really paves the way for pillar two, the good life. This isn't about chasing momentary pleasures anymore. It's about systematically building a life that yields abundant gratification.
And how do you do that?
By identifying your signature strengths, those core character strengths that are uniquely yours, the things you're good at, that you love doing, that feel authentic.
And this is where that big VIA project comes in, the classification of strengths and virtues.
Precisely. Seligman and Chris Peterson did this massive cross-cultural study to find out what virtues and strengths are universally valued across time and cultures. It's like the positive version of the DSM, the Manual for Mental Illness. Instead of diagnosing flaws, it identifies strengths.
Okay, so what did they find? What are these universal virtues?
They identified six core virtues, things like wisdom, courage, humanity, justice, temperance, and transcendence.
And under each virtue, there are specific strengths.
Yeah, 24 character strengths in total. So under wisdom, you find things like curiosity, love of learning, judgment. Under courage, you've got bravery, persistence, integrity.
Humanity has kindness and love. Transcendence includes gratitude, hope, spirituality. It's a whole framework for what's right with us.
Exactly. And the key insight for the good life is find out what your top five signature strengths are. The VIA survey online can help you do this and then consciously recraft your life.
Recraft? How?
Look at your work, your hobbies, your relationships. Ask yourself, how can I use my top strengths more in these areas? If curiosity is a top strength, how can you bring more of that into your job, even if it seems routine?
So it's about aligning your activities with your natural strengths to generate more of that flow, that gratification.
That's the path to the good life, living through your strengths.
Which then leads us to the highest level, the meaningful life.
Right. Once you're regularly experiencing the good life, using your strengths, feeling engaged, the next step is to connect that to something bigger.
Using those same signature strengths?
But in the service of a larger purpose. Contributing to your community, raising a family, advancing knowledge, fighting for justice. Something that transcends your own personal satisfaction.
So meaning isn't something you just stumble upon, it's something you build.
You build it through commitment. By using your best self to contribute to the well-being of others or to a cause you believe in, that's where the deepest, most sustainable fulfillment comes from.
So if we zoom out a bit, what are the really big shifts in thinking that Seligman's work brings?
Well, the first one for me is just completely redefining happiness beyond hedonism. We're so culturally conditioned to chase pleasure, the next good feeling.
The pleasant life.
Yeah. But this work really shows why that's a trap. The hedonic treadmill means you always adapt, you always need more. It's ultimately kind of shallow and unsustainable on its own.
Definitely. And the second big theme is the centrality of signature strengths. This is huge. Instead of focusing on fixing your weaknesses, which is often draining and demoralizing, the idea is to double down on what you're already good at. Build your life around your innate talents and the things that energize you. That feels like a much more direct path to fulfillment, doesn't it?
It really does. It's a fundamental shift from deficit correction to strength amplification, which connects to the next theme.
Which is building on what's right. This is the philosophical heart of positive psychology, isn't it? Focusing on amplifying strengths rather than just fixing problems.
Think about how that could change things. Parenting focused on nurturing a child's sparks, not just correcting faults. Management focused on leveraging team member strengths, not just mitigating weaknesses. Therapy focused on building resilience and well-being, not just treating illness.
It's a more optimistic and frankly, probably more effective approach in many ways.
And finally, maybe the most empowering theme is human agency and voluntary control, the V factor. Despite our genetic predispositions, S, and whatever life throws at us, Z,
we still have the significant chunk of control through our choices, our mindset, our actions. The book basically tells you you're not just a victim of your genes or circumstances. You have real power to cultivate your own well-being.
That V factor is where our agency lies. It's a deeply optimistic message about our potential to shape our own happiness baseline.
And the book itself is full of lines that just stick with you. They really capture these big ideas.
Yeah. He has a way of phrasing things, like this one, which really sums up why positive psychology was needed. Psychology is half-baked. The other side is unbaked. The side of strength, the side of what we're good at, the side of what makes life worth living.
Half-baked. That's blunt. It really highlights the gap he saw. And I like this one distinguishing the different levels. The good life is using your signature strengths to obtain abundant gratification. The meaningful life is using your signature strengths and virtues in the service of something much larger than you are.
It makes that distinction so clear, doesn't it? Internal satisfaction versus external contribution and purpose.
And this one is a powerful critique of just chasing easy fixes. The belief that we can rely on shortcuts to happiness rather than be entitled to these feelings by the exercise of personal strengths and virtues leads to legions of people who, in the middle of great wealth, are starving spiritually.
Oof, starving spiritually, that hits hard. It underscores that real happiness isn't something you consume, it's something you earn through effort, through building character.
Okay, so this is all fascinating theory, but how can you, listening right now, actually apply this stuff? What are some concrete takeaways?
Well, the most obvious first step is identify and design. Take the VIA strength survey. You can find it easily online. Find out your top 5 strengths.
And then don't just know them, use them.
Exactly. Actively look for ways to use them more. Analyze your job, your hobbies, even your chores. If love of learning is a top strength, how can you learn something new related to your work project? If kindness is high, how can you intentionally practice small acts of kindness during your commute? Just aiming for 10% more usage can make a difference.
That leads to that idea of transforming work, doesn't it? Even if your job isn't obviously glamorous.
Right. Like the example Seligman uses of the hospital orderly or the supermarket bagger. People who found ways to use strengths like kindness, social intelligence, or creativity to turn a seemingly mundane job into a meaningful calling. They saw their work as contributing to something bigger, healing, making someone's day better.
It's about reframing through your strengths. What else?
Another really practical tool is the three good things exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Super simple. Before bed, just write down three things that went well that day and briefly note why they went well.
How does that help?
It actively trains your brain to scan for positives, counteracting our natural negativity bias. Over time, it can literally shift your explanatory style towards more optimism and boost your appreciation for the good things already happening. It builds gratitude.
Simple, but powerful. Anything for relationships.
Yes. Focus on active constructive responding. This is about how you react when someone shares good news with you.
Instead of just saying, oh, nice.
Exactly. Go beyond that. Be enthusiastic. Ask questions. Really engage with their good news. Research shows this builds intimacy and strengthens bonds even more effectively than just being there during bad times. Celebrate the wins together, actively and constructively.
You know, my biggest takeaway from all this is really that sense of agency Seligman gives us. It's easy to feel like happiness is something external, dependent on luck or what happens to us.
Right, dependent on that C factor, the circumstances.
Yeah, but this framework says, no, while genetics play a role and circumstances have some impact, the real lever we can pull is V. Our choices, our character, how we engage with the world using our strengths. We're not just passengers, we're architects, at least partly.
I agree. And for me, the most valuable lesson flips the whole script on what happiness is. It's not a destination you arrive at or a prize you find. It's a set of skills you build.
Skills built through character and purpose.
Exactly. Through identifying and using your strength. Through connecting to something larger than yourself. The meaningful life isn't about finding yourself in some passive way. It's more about losing yourself in service, in engagement, in contribution. That's where the deep, lasting stuff lies.
It really is a blueprint for moving beyond just feeling okay towards genuinely flourishing. Stop chasing the temporary highs.
And start investing in your strengths, your engagement, your meaning. A powerful invitation, really.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.